This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. I am going to run the air conditioner today. It's a little warm here in the Ozarks. Of course, it's a little warm all the way across the southwest. We have had quite the weather configuration. And I was just watching the news this morning with the weather forecast. And it looks like it's pretty much going to be warm all the way through the weekend. So that's the way it goes in the Ozarks in the summer, and it seems like especially this summer. It's been a good week. I'm puttering along on my outline for Grumpy Old Prophets 2. That seems to be forming up and going well. I'm also still puttering along making preparations to record some of my own audiobooks. And it's interesting. I had ordered some of the panels, the insulation panels, and then I ordered some wooden frames for them. The wooden frames came in, and I realized I ordered the wrong size. I was like, oh, rats. But, you know, it may turn out that they were the right size after all. We're just going to wait and see how that is. So this weekend, if I have a chance, I'm planning to put together two of the panels just quickly and, you know, kind of see. I might be able to use them like I had them. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to try. What else? Charles McDonald's been staying with us, and he's making final preparations to head out to L.A. This should be very interesting to see how this goes. It's always fun when there's a great adventure. And, you know, as I've told him, it doesn't really matter what happens one way or another. It's going to be a great adventure. So, you know, if you don't do it, you're always going to wonder what would have happened if you had done it. So you just might as well try it, because he's young and unattached. It'll be great. I did go down with him a couple of nights ago to look at a car. He's been trying to find another car to take out there, because he has a keyboard he's trying to fit in the car, and it won't fit in his current car, and so he's working through that. And, you know, looking for cars, it's always exciting, so I was trying to help him a little bit with that. It'll be fun. It's been fun additionally because he's one of them young people, you know? And he has them young people friends. And so we've actually had young people in the basement watching movies again for the first time since I can't remember how long. And so that's been fun. And it's been fun to meet new people. This week. I have a topic that I didn't actually know that I was going to be talking about until Sunday. I'm working, reading another book on parallel universes, and once I get that done, I will probably do a topic on that. But this week, my son-in-law spoke at church, on his church on Sunday, and whenever he speaks, I play hooky from the church where Lynette, my wife, is doing the music, and I go over to hear my son-in-law speak. That's just a standing thing. My wife knows if Alan's speaking, I'm not going to be there on Sunday morning. So I ran over to hear him, and he did a great job, as always. But he actually mentioned and showed some videos of some molecular machines, biomachines, that I hadn't seen before. He told me later that he thought I was the one that pointed him towards the site, but I don't think I was, because I don't remember being out to this site. And he showed some of those and talked about it a little bit, some of the facts that they have on this site, and it was really fascinating. Just amazing, amazing stuff. You know, really cool stuff. And I thought when I was sitting there watching that, I thought, you know, you haven't done any kind of podcast on biomolecular machinery in quite a while, and you should just do another podcast. I think the last time we talked about it, we talked about ATP synthase, and we talked about RNA transcriptive, I think that's what they're called. And I'm going to be revisiting the RNA transcriptive because there was a video that was available out on this website that actually went into different detail than the detail I had talked about. And it was really very cool. And so I thought, yeah, I'll just revisit that again. The website where you can find these things, it's a research foundation of some sort, and they do these little videos as educational, and then I think as well trying to get people interested in their website so that they can raise more money to do more research. It's the Walter and Eliza Hall, H-A-L-L, Walter and Eliza, E-L-I-Z-A, and the website is at wehi.edu.au, and I'll put the link in the comments when I get home. It's very cool. They have videos, have a bunch of different videos, bunch of different stuff. I'm really only going to chat about four of them today, but a little bit of an extra one. No, actually, it's only four. Never mind. The first one, and I should have looked up the pronunciation on this, and I didn't. They said it's a process called apoptosis. Apoptosis? Anyways, A-P-O-P-T-O-S-I-S. And it looks like it's the process whereby a killer T cell obliterates a diseased cell in your body. This is very cool. They started off this video with a little bit of background, and the background was that the human body is a community of 100 trillion with a T, 100 trillion cells. And only 10 trillion of them, only 10% are human. Now that's an interesting statistic just right out of the gate. So only 10% of the cells that we carry around in our bodies are actually human cells. Now, some of those other cells we carry around are actually beneficial for us, and we have a symbiotic relationship with these cells, and that's fine, but obviously other cells are not beneficial that we carry around. And even some of our own cells get into trouble, and they need to be disposed of and dispensed with. And so these killer T cells, it's their job to go out and take care of them. Well, they went through the process, and I'm not going to get it right because I'm not a molecular biologist, but I'll just tell you what I saw on the video from some of the notes that I took. So there are these receptors, I think, on these killer T cells, and they're waiting, going, do we have a problem? Do we have a problem? They have like little antenna, these molecular antenna that are listening for messages from the immune system. So they're just up there. And these other chemicals come by and latch on to those because the immune system is saying, danger, Will Robinson, danger. And so these killer T cells go, hey, I have something to do. And so they start mosey it over, and they find the diseased cell, and when they do, it looks like they kind of settle down on its surface, and they stick in these death ligands, they're called, down into the cell. And these things attract some kind of death receptors inside the cell, and they start building molecules. These receptors activate something called, and I'm not going to get this right either, caspase, C-A-S-P-A-S-E, 8. So these things, this is just amazing. Goes down into the cell, and it somehow activates something in the cell, capsase, 8, capsase, yeah, that, cap, caspase, maybe it's cap, I don't know, anyway, 8, and it activates that, and in the process, that makes a version of the same molecule, but this version is called 3. And this version of the molecule then attacks proteins. And it actually cleaves them. So you've got this T killer cell, in essence, making biological warfare on this diseased cell. And it's creating a chemical that's going in and it's cleaving, it's splitting apart proteins. As that starts swelling and stuff, that then causes another compound to be created in the mitochondria of the cell. And that's called cytochrome C. And that activates APAF1. And that recruits caspase 9. And that creates aptosome. This is unbelievable. What's cool is that these videos supposedly really, really accurately reflect what's going on to the best of our knowledge. I mean, these are not videos that are put together by religious organizations to show how cool the cell is. These are real live researchers, molecular biologists that are putting together these videos. And if that's true, this actual new thing that sort of forms up in the mitochondria of the cell, it is really cool. It's like this hexagon-looking thing that has two layers of different chemicals on it. And once this thing gets formed up, it just starts spraying. It starts manufacturing that caspase 3 and just spraying it throughout the cell. And that then goes in and starts cleaving apart the actin cytoskeleton of the cell, which it looked like that was sort of the foundational pieces of the cell. And so literally the cell just comes apart at the seams. It just breaks up and that's the end of it. So you've got this killer T cell that's hanging out. He's got his antenna up. He gets activated. He goes, finds the diseased cell. He sticks his little death probes in there. And that starts a whole series of chemical reactions that causes this diseased cell to basically tear itself apart. It's very cool. So that was one of the videos they have out there. You can actually kind of watch it happening. It's very cool. Another one of the videos that they have out there is how DNA gets packed. We had actually talked about this several months ago, that no one was quite sure up until several months ago.
Excuse me.
How DNA, this 6-foot strand of chemical amino acids, 6-foot strand of amino acids all packed in this double helix, how in the world it gets packed so tight that it can be in every single cell of your body. And we talked about the fact that scientists had discovered that there is actually a fractal packaging scheme that is just about as efficient as you could possibly be. to pack this stuff in such a way that the cells could use it, and yet it would be super compact. And so they actually have a video out there about how a cell goes about packaging this DNA into this super complex form. And it's really cool. There are these things called histones, and they combine with DNA to create what's called a nucleosome. And when these histones latch onto the DNA just starts wrapping around it, and then more of them wrap together, and they wrap together in this gorgeous, beautiful pattern. And they just keep spiraling inward, and they keep making, you know, tighter and tighter and tighter. And then finally, they're all wrapped into these fibers that are called chromatin. And then this gets looped and looped and coiled, and it leads to chromosomes. And they were saying that the chromosomes aren't always present. You can't always see them in the cell, because then it gets folded and looped into other things. But when the cell's dividing, you can actually see the chromosomes form up, and you can actually, and they had real live video, because that's big enough that you can actually see it happening, so they didn't have to make digital graphics to show it happening. It's really elegant and a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. Of course, you have to take a step back and then say, okay, so how does the DNA actually get created in the first place so the histones can start wrapping it all up and packaging it tiny, tiny, tiny inside every cell in your body? And which, by the way, Alan, when he was speaking, had an interesting statistic. He was saying that according to his reading, that we are in our bodies making 50,000 new cells every 3 seconds. Every 3 seconds, we have 50,000 new cells being created in our body to keep up with the cells that are dying and need to be replaced. That means every 3 seconds, this process of the histones wrapping up the new DNA and compressing it goes on, and it happens 50,000 times. Every 3 seconds. Because every single one of those cells has DNA in it. Or maybe not, but the vast majority probably do. I don't know, I didn't look it up. Anyway, so then of course the question is, okay, so how does this DNA actually get manufactured? And there is a, they made a digital graphic of this on this site as well, and it's really interesting. When the cell has to divide and the DNA has to be done, there's a machine called helicase, and it latches onto the DNA. I don't know how it gets unfolded so that it can latch onto the DNA, but somehow it gets unfolded. It latches onto the DNA, and according to the video, this thing spins as fast as a jet engine. And this thing spins and unwinds the DNA and then splits it apart, and it feeds one stream in one direction and it feeds the other stream in the other direction, and one of the streams has another little machine then that just sucks in amino acids from the cell and just builds out, you know, it restores the DNA that was pulled apart. And so it just takes its master copy and puts it back in. And you would think, oh, well, then that's what's going to happen to the other side, too. It's just going to take the other one and just make a copy of it then. But it actually doesn't. You see this kind of loop of DNA comes spinning out, and there's other molecules that latch onto it. And then it works its way backwards up the strip until it gets to the last thing it did. So you've got the main strand of DNA going off to the right, for instance, and it's just getting duplicated, boom, 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 and it's put back into the cell. But the other strand that's going out is looping, and it's turning these loops. And at the start point of the loop, one moment, I'm going to have to back up because there is a car in my garage, in my driveway. So, one moment. You've got the cells, oh, running into trees. You've got kind of a straight shot on one side, and then you have a loop on the other side. And you imagine a loop. Well, wherever that loop starts, of course, it's fishing out. And then whenever the loop gets big enough, another process takes over where it works its way backward up the loop to wherever it started. While another loop is being spun out. And as soon as it gets the first loop all put together, then it starts working its way backward up the second loop while a third loop is being spun out. And this stuff is just going like crazy. I'm getting my mail. It's just going like crazy. And I was trying to find out some justification if they had figured out why it's done this way. But I couldn't find anything on the internet as to why scientists think you've got one that's being done straight and one that's being fished backwards and created backwards. I suspect that there's a good reason for it, but I was not able to find any, and maybe we don't know yet, and we're still working on that. So those are both very cool. And then the final video that I watched out there. Okay, I'm going to back all the way down my driveway and into my garage. So this is going to take longer than normal. So I will just go ahead and talk louder. The final video out there is on how DNA is used to create all the proteins that we need in our body. And they have this one actually labeled Central Dogma Part 1 and Part 2. And the reason that it's labeled Central Dogma Part 1 and Part 2 is because Francis Crick called this process of the cells taking our DNA and using it to manufacture proteins, Francis Crick called this the central dogma of modern biology. I mean, this is it. If this doesn't work, we are dead because our cells can't produce any protein. And not only are we dead, every biological machine on the planet is dead because this is how we utilize the DNA, the blueprint that we have in our cells, to be able to create every single protein that we need in our cells. What happens is that you've got this little RNA transcriptive that we had talked about before that clusters onto DNA and somehow knows where it's supposed to start and where it's supposed to end. And it moves forward one slot at a time over the DNA, and it creates a copy that's almost identical chemically to DNA, but the T value actually becomes U for some reason. And it actually produces, instead of a string of DNA, it produces a string of RNA. When we talked about this before, we talked about the fact that this RNA transcriptive actually has a backspace key, to where if it makes a mistake, it actually lunges backwards one letter. And then there are these chemicals that come in and clip off the mistake, and then it starts moving forward again. And the energy from every chemical bond as it's making this RNA actually causes it to move forward to the next one. It's fascinating stuff. What I didn't read about when I was reading about RNA transcriptive is what happens later. So you've got this RNA transcriptive, and it makes this little string of RNA, which is an instruction set for how to build the protein. Bear in mind, this is happening right now in almost every cell in your body. That's what they said on the video. Really fascinating. Okay. So when the RNA gets done, then it kind of works its way out into the outer part of the cell. And in their words, then a dazzling choreography occurs where all the necessary components lock together on this RNA and form a factory called a ribosome. And this ribosome then attracts transfer molecules. And each of the transfer molecules is coded for a specific amino acid. And there's like 20 of them. And they all have these three-letter sequences that they're looking for. And so as this ribosome is working its way down this RNA strand, you've got all these transfer molecules that have all the different combinations of this three-letter code floating by, and the ribosome, you know, they're floating in and locking, and the ribosome is determining through all, it's all done through chemical reactions, whether or not that's the right one or not. And when it finds the right one, then it goes click, and it puts that in to the growing chain of amino acids that are being built off of this. And so it plugs it in. And step by step, it makes a protein. And you can see on the video how this little protein is just kind of coming out. Chicka, 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 chicka. And this is how we make all the proteins in our bodies all the time. The video that they showed was making hemoglobin. Bear in mind, as they say on the end of the video, that our cells churn out 100 trillion molecules of hemoglobin per second. 100 trillion molecules of hemoglobin per second are being pumped out by your cells going through this amazing dance of the RNA transcriptive, opening up the DNA, getting the blueprint for hemoglobin, letting the little RNA float out into the cell, the ribosomes forming, clamping around it, transfer cells coming in, bringing in the appropriate amino acids, ticket, 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 you know, little manufacturing plant down there. And it's happening 100 trillion times every second. And that's just hemoglobin, which is what you need for the cells to get oxygen. It's just amazing. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.